In partnership with the Lilly Fellows Program, the Institute of Communication and Religion at Seton Hall is proud to present a follow-up to Communication and Religion in the 2020 Election Conference. Join four of the speakers as they discuss what happened in the 2020 election and what these events say about the future in communication and religion.
Hello to our listeners. This is the Seton Hall Institute for Communication and Religion podcast. My name is Jasmine DeLeon, and I will be your host for today's episode. I am excited to introduce Dr. Joe Renee Formicola, a professor of political science at Seton Hall University. Dr. Formicola has published 9 books, numerous articles in peer-reviewed journals, and has been interviewed by press around the world. She's a specialist on church-state issues, particularly how Catholic thinking and teachings impact public policy in the U.S. and abroad. Dr. Formicola participated in the Seton Hall Institute for Communication and Religion Conference on the intersection of faith, politics, and rhetoric in the 2020 U.S. presidential election. She specifically commented on Catholics in the media in the 2020 election, and we are here today to follow up and ask her about what has changed in the last 2 years. Dr. Formicola, thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Happy to be here.
In 2020, as you said before, you participated in the Communication and Religion Presidential Election Conference. You said that the Catholic vote is a myth. Can you please explain to our listeners what this means?
Well, I think a lot of people think that there is such a thing as the Catholic vote, or that there is a Catholic bloc, and that Catholics vote in lockstep according to their religion. And that is not necessarily the case. Catholics vote in many different ways based upon things other than their religion. For example, Hispanic Catholics vote differently from Italian Catholics, or rural Catholics vote differently from city Catholics, or female Catholics vote differently from male Catholics. In other words, it's not a monolithic block for which they vote. They have different issues, different concerns, and they're part of a larger mainstream of the context of American society. And so if you look to see the vote from 2020, for example, it's really very interesting. If you look at the data that's come out, the data shows that there's almost a 50-50 split between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party as to how Catholics voted. So you can no longer count on the Catholic vote to go totally to the Democrats, which it had in the past, nor can you count on the Catholic vote to go unquestionably towards Republicans, which it had at one time as well. So that we have to understand them in the context of the larger voting public, and they have many different things that enter into why they vote as they do. And religion is just one of the things that goes into that equation.
To piggyback off of what you said on that split in the Catholic vote during the 2020 election, there are many articles that said that Biden and Trump split the vote in America. And because you said that the vote is a myth, are these polls flawed in any way, or does that reflect more of like the diversity of experiences of Catholic people in the United States?
No, I think the polls are correct, and the polls show this split. What is very interesting, though, is if you look at certain issues, look at something like abortion, for example. That's a very big issue, one would think, with Catholics, but it really isn't. Okay. There is a very large group of Catholics who consider themselves to be what we would call social justice Catholics. And their concerns are for the poor, for the marginalized, for immigrants, et cetera. On the other hand, you have people who are considered to be life and death Catholics, whose main concern is with life and death issues, which would be things like death and dying, dignity with dying, abortion, IVF, cloning, so that there are very different issues that motivate Catholics as to how they're going to vote and what issues are of significance and how they tie into party and ideology, so that you don't always get what you think you're going to get out of the Catholic vote.
That's very interesting because on the day of Joe Biden's inauguration, Catholic Archbishop Jose Horacio Gomez released a statement, and he started by saying that his prayers are with the family, and he emphasized that for America's Catholic bishops, the quote, continued injustice of abortion remains the preeminent priority. And because you say that Catholic demographics are myth and diverse, is the debate around abortion what divides most Catholics? Is the debate around abortion what divides most Catholics, or is there a lot of different elements here, like you said, with social justice Catholics and life and death Catholics?
I don't think that abortion is the be-all and end-all of Catholics and the way they make their choices, because I think the number of Catholics and the demographic has changed radically. When you look at the number of Hispanics, Hispanics are the ones who have really kept the demographic information about Catholics at a stable number in the United States. So when you say how many Catholics are there in the United States, approximately 24.5%, okay, are Catholics. That number, however, if you said how many of those are Hispanic, a lot of that number is based on Hispanics. And again, the Hispanic vote, just as the Catholic vote, there's a very different vote among Mexican Hispanics and Cuban Hispanics, for example. Okay, Cuban Hispanics are much more concerned with business, with priorities, with issues of freedom, et cetera, whereas Mexican Catholics are much more concerned with issues about immigration, social justice, getting people to the United States, helping them to achieve equity and equality here, so that even within the Catholic vote, where Hispanics are a large part, they are also bifurcated within that larger group.
So during the U.S. 2020 presidential elections, what political role did the Catholic vote play? You said it was split. Did it make a big difference? Do you think that if it was split in a different way, it would have changed the outcome of the election?
Catholics by themselves cannot really control an election. There are 24.8% of the population. Catholics could have a major impact if indeed they allied themselves with another religious group that had similar views on certain issues. For example, if Catholics allied themselves with evangelicals, for example, on pro-life issues. Evangelicals represent approximately 25% of the American population. If you put together 24 and 25 and you come up with 49% of the population, they would have a significant voice on a matter such as abortion or other social issues. But they do not ally together in a coalition, in a political coalition to do that. A number of years ago, I was at the White House doing an interview, and I asked the person I was interviewing, why don't Catholics have more clout in the United States? Okay. And it was a very, very interesting response. The response was, Catholics have the voice of a lion, but the body of a mouse. Basically, it meant that, you know, they talk big, but when it comes to actually joining together and doing something significant, like registering voters or doing things that are going to make a major change in society, they don't follow through enough. They don't do things enough politically to give them the clout that they need to have an impact on agenda or policy or whatever.
If Catholics were to unite and create that clout and to have a larger effect on elections, what do you think that might look like?
Well, it's hard to say because, again, don't forget, within the Catholic vote, okay, you've got ideological liberals and ideological conservatives in terms of those who are supporting life issues and those who are supporting social justice issues. The same is pretty much true with evangelicals, but the life issues have a greater following within their coalition, so that it might be possible for them to have some sort of clout, but it's difficult to say. When you look at the makeup of the United States government right now, okay, the president of the United States is a Catholic. The Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, is a Catholic. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and the majority of the justices are Catholic. Okay. And yet, if you said to me, do they reflect any kind of a Catholic agenda on life issues, you basically have to say no. But if you said, do they represent Catholic social justice issues, you'd have to say yes. Because yes, they are very concerned about things like immigration, voting reform, equality, equity, reforming the different processes, et cetera. But none of them are really pushing for some kind of major changes in life issues. Certainly not the president and certainly not the Speaker of the House.
So the difference between life and death focused Catholics and then social justice Catholics, is that the split between who follows the Republican Party and then who follows the Democratic Party?
Not really. We like to make it that simple. We like to say, well, if you're a liberal, you're a Democrat. And if you're a conservative, well, then you're a Republican. But there's a difference between the terms liberal and conservative. They're ideological views. They're the lens by which you look at political actions. The parties are only the means by which those actions and agendas are carried out. Okay, so let's say you look at the Trump presidency, for example. President Trump was not a Catholic. He's been many different things, changed his mind on a lot of things. But on the right to life issue, this time around, he came out for pro-life. He showed up at the famous pro-life rally that's held every January and said, you know, I've got your back, I'm behind you. Okay, contrast that now with a Democratic president who just 1 week ago did not show up for the Right to Life March and who did not really make any statement about it. And yet he's the Catholic and Trump was not. So it's a very strange situation. If you look at Biden, Biden is a Democrat. He's a liberal. He's a Catholic. But more than anything else, he's a pragmatist. He's going to do what he thinks is going to get his particular policies and agenda through. So I don't think his religion is the thing that motivates him. I think it's part of him, but I don't think it's the be-all and the end-all. Although he will claim, and he says, you know, that Catholic social doctrine and social teaching motivates my social policy. However, it depends on what social policies you're looking at. I wish I could somehow make it clearer, but you know, I am wrestling with this problem as well because I'm writing in this area and researching in this area right now. And I just think that this is something that in his own way, the president struggles to try to find a way to be a Catholic, be a Democrat, be a liberal, you know, and be a pragmatist all at the same time. No one person is just one thing. They have many different dimensions to them. And so unless a politician like a Nancy Pelosi or, you know, a President Biden or a Sonia Sotomayor or certain people, you know, Amy Coney Barrett or Gorsuch or Kavanaugh or whatever, unless this is the be-all and end-all of their existence, you can't count on their Catholicism being the only thing that they use in making political judgments.
So shifting from Catholic leaders in the government, who clearly are partisan actors, to church leaders, there were well-known Catholic religious leaders like Father James Martin and Sister Dadie Byrne, who spoke at the 2020 Democratic and Republican national conventions. Aren't Catholics not supposed to be partisan players in U.S. politics? Can you kind of explain the dynamics here?
Okay. They were not partisan players insofar as they appeared at both conventions. And these conventions are paid for by the DNC and the RNC and paid for by contributions from individual persons. They were not attending something that was paid for by the United States government. And therefore, they can attend these kinds of events as citizens. They're citizens who happen to be Catholics, and therefore they have a right to speak, just as some Catholic who is pro-choice can speak at a convention as well, so that they wouldn't be denied the right to speak because they are citizens as well as Catholics.
There are also other Catholic speakers at the conventions too, but do you think that this is something that the church supports in terms of having like religious and priests speak at partisan political events, especially if it's, you know, especially if they're being used as a political tool?
That's something that the church is very careful about. The church, if you look at its writings and its position, the church will always say that its purpose is never to be political, that its purpose is always to be pastoral, to be a teacher, to serve as a moral compass, to bring moral issues to the fore. And those are the things that they will argue are at the basis of their political support or their political support for agendas or policies or whatever. Theology to them is always at the basis of what they support or oppose. And that's what they will argue. Now, the means of how they do it, that's a different story. How much lobbying or talking to politicians, et cetera, those kinds of things are very tightly controlled by the IRS and by the Federal Elections Committee. And how much time they can spend and how much of their actual financing they can use is also tightly controlled. And so if they go beyond what the law says, they can be fined and they would place themselves in a very difficult economic and political position if they did that. So they very closely adhere to this. But, you know, this is something that is also done normally within the Black church. I mean, if you look at some of the larger Black churches, for example, in New York, the Abyssinian Baptist Church, or you look at some of the famous ministers, Calvin Butts, a variety of people, you know, from television and whatever, who are also in politics, et cetera. The church is a place where they feel that it is a community where the congregants have the right to hear political ideas from people so that they understand what they're voting for and who they're voting for. So the Federal Elections Committee walks a very tight rope as to who they watch, and I don't know if watch is the proper term, but who they allow to have political speakers come to different large churches.
So during the 2020 election, how did Joe Biden and Trump use appeals to try and draw in Catholic voters? I think one example might be appealing to pro-life or pro-choice, but also Biden did try to appeal, in addition to what you said before, to evangelical Christians, and he appointed Josh Dickinson as his campaign national. What did they do during the election to try and gain support from these groups?
It's important to realize in campaign management that you have a certain amount of time, you have a certain amount of money, and you have to decide where are you going to spend your time and your money and your efforts. And you're going to put those efforts where you think you're going to reap the most benefit. And clearly, you know, in the Biden campaign, the effort was not to try to get the Catholic vote. There was an attempt to hold on to what had been there before, but there wasn't any great push to try to get more Catholics to come out and vote, because the demographic has changed in this country. Who are the largest group of people who are going to be coming out to vote that could be new voters? And in this country, the big push was to try to get more minority voters to come to the Democratic Party, because they were representing a much larger demographic and group of people who were simpatico with the kinds of things that Joe Biden and the Democratic Party were talking about. They were talking about things like police reform. They were talking about things like healthcare, financing, daycare for children, free college tuition, things that were going to help people who were marginalized and on the edges of society. And that was their outreach. So, you know, trying to keep the Catholic vote was not a number one priority for the Biden campaign. It was there, but clearly the push was towards the minorities in the hopes that they would get new voters and more voters and get people who had not voted before to finally come out to the polls and vote.
Do you think that Pope Francis had any role in influencing the election with a lot of stances he's taken based on Catholic social teachings like climate change and...
Well, you know, when President Biden visited with the Pope, it was very interesting because I remember being interviewed for several newspapers, and they thought, well, you know, what is going to be the thing that the president and the Pope are going to talk about? Are they going to talk about abortion? Well, no, they're not going to talk about what separates them. What they're going to talk about is what they have in common. And what they have in common is agendas for climate change and environmental justice. I mean, the Pope wrote an encyclical on this, and it's clearly something that Joe Biden has been pushing. It's something that the progressive wing of his party wants him to push. And this was the perfect place. You know, we have the photo op and the president and the Pope, you know, exchanging gifts and everything. And, you know, the Pope giving blessings to Biden. I mean, it was the perfect photo op. At this, you wouldn't want to ruin it with an issue where they might have differences. Or at that particular time, that was when the American bishops wanted to sanction Joe Biden and wanted to, you know, not allow him to receive communion, et cetera. I mean, all of this was going on within the United States. So that trip to the Vatican was extremely important for Biden, not so much for the Pope, but for Biden it was, because it gave legitimacy to his Catholicism and it gave legitimacy to the whole notion of social justice, which is what he wanted to be known for, social justice. He wanted to keep the abortion issue at bay, because if indeed he were to somehow support a pro-life issue, he could lose the whole progressive wing of his party. So that he was straddling that on the one hand, but he could really count on the environmental justice issue on the other.
Can you speak to the perception of Catholics in American politics? You touched on many different things so far about the social justice, focusing more on life and death issues, etc. How do different groups of people in the United States view Catholics? I think my first question is just kind of young people. What is your idea of how young people view it?
It's really interesting. If you look at something like the Pew Research Center, and they follow numbers on religion and public life, it's really interesting. If you look at the bigger picture of religion in the United States, the largest growing number of people in the United States are non-affiliated, especially younger people who say, you know, I have religious beliefs, I have my own personal beliefs, but I don't think I need to be in a church or a temple or a mosque or whatever to live those beliefs. And so we have in this country a major shift in religion and religious belief and what kind of practice young people follow. Older people, they're still going to church, you know, because they were raised as Catholics. A lot of them went to, you know, Catholic school, Catholic college. I'm one of those people. But for the generations that have come after me, they haven't gotten the same Catholic education. Catholic schools are closing everywhere. Catholic universities have completely changed their mission. You know, they're no longer about the same things that they were about, for example, when I first came to this university. The difference is now that we want to recognize multiculturalism, pluralism, diversity, et cetera, not just in culture, but also in religion. And so, although our university is a Catholic university and we espouse Catholic values, we also accept others' values and respect them and ask that they will respect ours. But, you know, I can see this over the years. I do teach Catholicism in the political process. And it's always very interesting because the class is made up of people from all different majors, from all different parts of the university. And it's great because we get input. Let's say we're doing something about abortion. You know, we might get somebody from bio who's explaining, you know, about the latest research on, you know, when does life begin and whatever, or we're doing something on social justice and somebody from economics in the business school, you know, we'll talk about some kind of issues of financing and what it means in terms of, you know, bringing other people in and giving them money and the taxes, et cetera. But within that group, I get a huge cross-section of students at this university. And they range from everything from atheists on the one hand to people on the other hand who are extremely committed to pro-life and who are the people who do attend, you know, marches and et cetera. So that I see all spectrum of students. And it's really very interesting. But really, if I stack up what I see in the classroom and what the numbers show, like at the Pew Research Forum, it's true that people are becoming more and more unaffiliated. And that doesn't mean they're not culturally a Catholic. Culturally a Catholic means I was brought up in a Catholic household, but my parents didn't send me to a Catholic school. Sometimes I go to church. My parents don't really, you know, go to mass or anything, but, you know, cultural ideas that my parents talk about those things. And, you know, sometimes we discuss that or whatever. No, I didn't, you know, receive all my sacraments, but I'll think about that sometime in the future or whatever. So that religion is not the priority that it used to be, at least from my vantage point of what I do. And from the vantage point of my research, I don't see it as a major consideration in politics or generally in life with young people any longer.
I did have one question going back to the election, because
okay.
Has been a debate among Catholic leaders for many years. The debate around, especially in the Catholic bishop community in the United States, whether Joe Biden should receive the Eucharist. And beforehand, this was already an ecclesiastical debate among Catholic leaders for many years. Does this debate affect American politics? And if it does, how does it affect it?
I don't think it does affect American politics because, as I said, I don't think that Catholics vote only on their religion. I don't think for them it is the one reason why they go to the voting booth and vote a certain way. People who walk into the voting booth have a lot of different things to consider. You know, is the country at peace? You know, am I going to be able to send my kids to college? Is this person going to, you know, help me in my retirement years? What's the economy like? You know, are we going to be going to war? Is COVID ever going to end? I mean, all these kinds of things enter into the mix. So that I don't think that religion at this point, and maybe never again, will be the main consideration when a person walks into the voting booth. Every election cycle, the bishops issue a particular document where they ask people to look at their conscience and to consider the issues. And really what they ask people to do is just to make their religion a consideration, not the consideration, not the only consideration, but just to give it some thought when you are pulling that lever. And I think at this point, they're happy if they can get people to consider religion as a factor when they go into the voting booth. I mean, the church thinks of itself as a teacher, as a moral guide. And in this country, because of rules and regs that we have about separation of church and state, there's really not more that they can do than that.
Okay. Do you have any last thoughts or comments?
I guess the most important thing for me is the fact that I'm always encouraged when students sign up at our university and take courses in the core. The core is really the place where we talk about our values, all our different set of values. What makes us different from other universities? What separates us? What are we about? And we are about more than just the bottom line. We're about more than just trying to look good. We're about things like helping other people. We're about trying to take our values and bring them to a higher level. We don't just talk about justice, but we talk about compassion. We talk about trying to understand people. We try to understand our relationship to other people. We try to understand that you know, what we're about here is different than what people are about at other places. And when we graduate students, we hope that they will be people who will go out and do something, not just for themselves or their family, but for their community and for their country and for their religion and for the values that we taught them here. And whenever I see those classes fill up or I have a waiting list, I know we're still on the right track and we should still keep going at it.
Well, that is all the time that we have for today. It has been a pleasure, Dr. Formicola. Thank you all for listening and stay tuned for more episodes. I'm your guest host, Jasmine DeLeon, signing off.
This follow-up to the College of Communication and Religion's 2020 conference is hosted by Jasmine DeLeon and Joaquin Matamas and produced by Kai DeJesus. The college would also like to thank the Lilly Fellows Program for their contributions and you for listening.